I didn't realize. I'm sorry. I didn't realize he was he who should not be named on this podcast. So I won't say his name either.
I appreciate that. Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Aaron Washington coming back at you with the Business Casual Basketball Podcast. This is episode 120. We're getting into close to the preseason here. It was just announced just about an hour ago, as of this recording, that the preseason schedule has been announced. So things are getting real around here. We know that the NBA is coming back in short order, and we're very excited for the opportunity to watch basketball again. But as you can see here, I have a very special guest with me here on this podcast. This is Sekou Smith. A lot of you all will probably know this man very well from his work in NBA TV as an analyst, a writer. He's also part of the Hang Time podcast. So this man has a lot of expertise when it comes to the game of basketball. He knows his stuff. He knows what he's talking about here. So very happy to have the opportunity to speak to Sekou here on this podcast. I'm sure you guys would love to hear what he has to bring to this conversation from the perspective of the offseason that we are currently in and just talking about some of these signings here. So Sekou, I'm so glad that you had the opportunity to join me here, man. And thanks for offering your time to discuss some of these offseason moves with the fans here. And so excited to get down to business here as we talk about some of these signings that these teams have been making here the past few weeks.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for the invite, man. Appreciate it. I always love to talk NBA basketball, probably a little too much around my house. So probably good I'm talking to somebody else.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. My family definitely has heard quite a bit from me over the past few weeks of the offseason. So I can definitely relate to that here, man. Before we get into our conversation here formally, I just want to give a shout out to a couple of our sponsors that really help make things run here at Unwrapped Sports as a part of our podcast. The first is mybookie.ag. Use that promo code that's at the bottom of your screen, guys, USN100. That's going to give you a 100% sign-up bonus. So if you guys are ready to get your bets in, NFL season is in full swing. NBA is not too far behind. So go ahead and get your bets doubled there if you want to get your action started and get ready to go as we get into the heart of football and basketball season. Things are getting exciting around here, guys. And then also rxhemp.com gets us hooked up with this special cream here for, you know, if you're getting sore, if you need a little bit of extra recovery here, you use that code rxhemp-usn to get 10% off your entire order. They're going to get you guys hooked up and ready to go, get back on the court. A lot of my listeners here, I check out the demographics. They're a little bit older, so recovery is definitely needed when it comes to bouncing back off of a strenuous workout or whatnot. So go ahead and check those out, guys. But with that being said, let's go ahead and dive into the off-season content here, Sekou. I've split this up three ways: good, bad, ugly. As we talked about before the podcast, this is my perspective of the off-season. So Sekou might have a completely different opinion on some of these teams and the moves they've made. But just some general guidelines here before we get started here. So let's go ahead and dive in here, man. So the good moves of free agency. I want to go ahead and start off with one team in the Northwest Division that has had a great offseason. According to most people that you might talk to or interact with on Twitter or around the NBA circle, that's the Portland Trailblazers. So for Portland, they have been very active. As we know, they had an incredible run in the bubble led by Damian Lillard. He really got them in position to be in the playoffs, and he even had some heroics going down the stretch there. And just the fact that he even had a shot to be in the playoffs there was a testament to his greatness and just how much he really carries that team on his back. So looking at some of the signings they've made, I mean, they've really been busy here, and they bolstered that front court specifically. You look at guys like Derek Jones Jr., Robert Covington, Harry Giles, even Cantor coming off of the bench here at the center position. They've been very active, and all of these moves are going to really help them when it comes to that wing forward rotation. It's definitely been a need for them in the past few years. They brought in Trevor Ariza last season. He did some good things for them, but he wasn't present in the bubble. So having some guys, namely like Derek Jones and Harry Giles, to provide energy, and Robert Covington for that 3-and-D is going to be very timely here, man. So, Sekou, I want to get your opinion on this, their offseason specifically. Like, what do you think of the moves they made here, and what do those moves specifically kind of tell you about what Portland is trying to do as we get closer to the 2021 season here, not too far away?
Well, I think Portland found themselves in a position where a couple of years ago they had Mo Harkless and Alvaro Camino as their wing forwards, and they could play them interchangeable at the power forward or small forward. They're versatile enough to defend, switch, and guard basically whoever you needed to. Then last year they tried to go bigger, and I think they had in mind to play Zach Collins and Yusuf Nurkic together. and it didn't give them the kind of versatility I think they thought they'd have. Collins, of course, got injured and had to alter their plans. Carmelo Anthony comes in and winds up being the answer that they needed there. But I think what Neil O'Shea is doing is trying to get back to that, you know, Portland lineup we saw a couple years ago where he had two really versatile 3-and-D forwards that could kind of do a little bit of everything. You get that in Covington, who's an excellent defender. You're going to get Rodney Hood back. But, I mean, there's going to be enough versatility at the position with the additions they made. And I think Giles is, you know, I love Covington's game. I love an unselfish wing forward who can guard his position and several others and hit threes and score the way he can, rebound, physical. But I think the Harry Giles pickup is more indicative of what Neil O'Shea's vision is for this team. And that's when you're going out and getting low-risk, high-reward players like that, you know, finding guys on rosters that you think can come in and play a bigger role on your team or maybe be the missing piece to your rotation. They're deep at that perimeter forward spot, you know, and it could be one or two positions, you know, given the way teams like to play small ball now. But I think it really gives you the versatility with, you know, say you have Carmelo coming off the bench now, you know, and Covington starting. You're talking about a second group for Portland with, you know, Gary Trent Jr. and Simons and all these different pieces in his canter. They're going to have a second group, I think, that boosts them into that next category of teams. I put them in my top four based on what we've seen so far in the Western Conference ahead of some other teams like Utah, Phoenix, and others, even Houston, who have had off seasons that haven't been very clear in terms of them either getting better or what they're trying to do. I just feel like Portland, given where they finished, I know it was a first-round exit against the Lakers, but their trajectory with the guys they have coming back, the core group they put together, I think puts them in that mix for one of those top four spots in the West.
You know, I totally agree with what you're saying about the moves they made in free agency. And the theme you keep bringing up is versatility. You look at their lineup and it's like, offensively and defensively, I mean, they can go big, small. They can match it with the Lakers and the Nuggets of the world if they need to go up against a Jokic or Anthony Davis or whatnot. And then, of course, those teams like Houston, historically, that have gone smaller, and they can match it with them very well. So, you know, Portland definitely has a clear vision, and I think that gives them an edge when it comes to the moves that they're going to be making and the vision they have, the goals they have for next season. I mean, this is a contending team. You have somebody like Damian Lillard that's, you know, MVP candidate every year that can get you 30 and 40 any given night. Your goals have to be quite clear. CJ McCollum, those guys bring a lot of scoring, but of course there's deficits in that backcourt defensively. They're not the most versatile bunch, so they're trying to compensate for those weaknesses in other areas of the roster. So absolutely agree. And then that bench that you mentioned, I mean, that's definitely been a weak spot. You go back even last season, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they've had one of the least scoring bench units in the league. So Simons is going to have another year under his belt. I think he's going to be ready for a full-time backup point guard role. And I think that's why they didn't come in and bring in somebody like that, like a DJ Augustine or George Hill to come in, because they have full confidence in Simons to man that role very well. So absolutely agree with you. And Gary Trent Jr., we saw from him, man, like, what a revelation. Incredible performance. Yeah, so I mean, from those two guys coming off the bench, you're going to be in great hands. And I think that regardless of whether Dame is CJ on the court, they're going to be quite all right defensively, offensively. So I think that's what gives them a clear path to be, like you said, one of those top four teams. It's definitely not out of the question for them.
They have the makeup for it. And I think the key for their second group will be what kind of chemistry you can develop with those young guys in the backcourt, Simons and Trent Jr. and Rodney Hood and Carmelo. And if Enes Kanter is your backup five, he played some of his best basketball we've seen from him since he's been in the league when he was with Portland, you know, playing that role, filling in a couple of years ago in the postseason. That, you know, that entire unit, I think, is going to be critical for Portland, because Dame and CJ, for whatever reasons, have had their bumps and bruises the past few years where, you know, where they're not – you put so much of the scoring burden on those two guys, and to me that kind of chokes – you know, the energy out of what they do. If you have Carmelo and Rodney Hood coming off that bench and then Trent Jr. where he can stretch the floor, you're going to be able to play basically whatever way you want with your second unit, which is critical. I think the one thing I learned watching games in the bubble is, you know, your depth it can be good on paper, but if it's not good in the flesh, like if you can't put your second group out there or have a second group that has a catalyst for you that can score and direct traffic or just be a kind of a force on the court, you're going to be in trouble. So the fact that you look around and see all these different teams, you know, making sure to fortify their second group is not a coincidence. I think that's something that a lot of teams recognized in that unique experience that was the bubble, that you can't go out there leaning on your stars to the point where, you know, they don't have it come playoff time. Look at the Clippers. Couldn't find that right synergy with their second group, and it cost them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one last point I wanted to make is how Harry Giles kind of fits into that rotation, like how he's going to make a name for himself with that team. You know, he had a up and down tenure with Sacramento, and I read an article about him just yesterday, and he really says that he has an opportunity to come back to that team that actually drafted him three years ago, coming out of college. And, you know, he had those ACL injuries, and, you know, he really had some setbacks physically that hampered his ability to be one of the higher draft picks, but the talent is there. The ability is there, no question. The physical ability. So for him to be able to come in and maybe be that four or small ball five, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he supplants Cantor in that rotation maybe later on if he has a really strong run. You know, he really asserts himself as one of those energy players that Portland can depend on each night. If he stays healthy, I think the opportunity is there for him. I mean, he said it himself. He's fully confident in his ability still. He's not discouraged by his setbacks, and he thinks he's going to have a really great bounce back season. And a place like Portland, that's a place to learn from. The front court has a lot of experience. The back court, they've been through a lot of playoff battles. So I'm really hopeful that Giles is going to have a bounce back season, you know, considering where he's been. You know, I think he's going to have a great opportunity at the very least. Let's see if he can take advantage of it.
Yeah, if you look at what Rodney Hood did a couple of years ago, what Carmelo did, kind of, you know, rekindling their careers in Portland. It's just something about that. There's kind of a magic to what they do out there in terms of the fan base and the way they play, their player development program, the great situation you get to be in as a role player, because Dame and CJ shoulder the burden, the leadership burden, you know, the being the star players, the guys that you expect to go out every night and score at that all-star level. It allows a guy like Harry Giles to come in and not have any pressure on him in terms of what the expectation is. If he has to ease into a role and kind of find his niche, that's perfect. Again, he allows you so much, you know, he gives Terry Stotts so many different dimensions. If they want to play a small group with he or even Covington, you know, guarding at the five, you know, I think you get away with that. It's just going to be a matter of how quickly that group comes together and what kind of chemistry they develop as an entire group and as a second group in terms of that backup rotation.
For sure. Absolutely. So that's going to be a team to watch, whether it's on League Pass, one of those League Pass darlings going into the playoff run. I think they're going to be a fascinating team, and I can't wait to see what Dame and that whole roster can accomplish together, because they have all the makings of a very, very solid team, an elite team even. So moving on here, Sek, we have Phoenix, another team that a lot of people are talking about for all the right reasons. I mean, you go in and you pick up a point guard that is an All-NBA caliber player, even in his mid-30s, first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the great point guards we've ever seen in our game. He's going to come in and share the backcourt with Devin Booker, one of our great talents of our game at the shooting guard position. Those two guys should be able to make sweet music, no matter who has the ball, no matter who's operating on or off the ball. I'm so excited to see those two guys work together. I think they're going to be one of the best 1-2 punches in the league. And just looking at some numbers here for Chris Paul, you talked about just, you know, a few minutes ago about not having, you know, your star player run into the ground and having energy left over towards the end of the season. He said usage rates hovering around mid-80s to 90% in his career. But the great thing is, into his 30s, he's had a graceful decline in how much he's dominated the ball, going down into, you know, the 70th percentile down there, in about 27% usage. So that's perfect for him. But he still has a great assist percentage, still been great with the ball, you know, never been a high turnover player. So somebody like that next to Devin Booker, it's almost like a supercharged version of Ricky Rubio, who they shipped out along with Kelly Oubre to make this possible. So I love how that pairing is going to work out. And Sekou, how do you think that those two are going to operate off of each other? And how might Chris Paul make life easier for Devin Booker going into probably the most important season in Phoenix basketball in quite some time?
Yeah, I think they'll be fine. I think they're going to be a lights out duo in terms of backcourt. You start ranking the best backcourts in the league, they got to be in the conversation just based on what they've done. I think Chris will allow Devin more flexibility on offense. He's not going to see as many double teams and traps and, you know, gimmick, you know, defenses to come at him, because you can't leave Chris Paul, the kind of shooter he is at this stage of his career. And he's always been a really good shooter, but he's a great shooter.
Definitely.
Late in his career, just a great mid-range shooter, shoots a three, can drive and create, dish, get his own. He's going to make it very difficult for you to commit your best defender to Devin Booker and then ask yourself, because this is one something Ricky Rubio simply couldn't do, is he couldn't beat you consistently with his offense, at least not a shooting. He could create, but CP gives you both those dimensions, and I think that's ideal. I do think Monty Williams has done something really smart in that when he came in, he kind of changed the dynamic for those players in Phoenix in that there was no debating who's – team it was, who was the star, who was your number one player. So that allowed other guys, you know, it's easy to play your role when you know your role.
Exactly, yeah.
Chris is coming in with really the last 3 years of his career is he's had to share the ball more. You mentioned his usage rate, you know, in a steady decline. Well, that's going to happen when you play with James Harden.
Definitely.
And then you get a three-guard rotation in Oklahoma City with Dennis Schroeder and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and it maybe forced him to play in a more democratic way than he has early in his career. I think all of that's been beneficial for him. There's a reason the Suns identified Chris as the right point guard to have next to Devin Booker. And if they can get DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, who I love, as kind of a new age Andre Iguodala type for the Suns, you know, if they can get all those pieces around those guys to play at a high level, like we saw in the bubble when they went undefeated, they're a scary group.
Definitely.
Because the West is going to be thick at the top, but there's going to be some flattening out once you get to the middle and lower half. And this was a huge opportunity for the Suns to step into that void and become a real playoff team.
Oh yeah, the opportunity is wide open for them. Teams like Golden State are going to be a little bit iffy with the Klay Thompson injury.
Don't remind me, man. I'm still sick about Klay.
Me too.
My favorite player in the league, hands down, and to lose him for a second straight season is just brutal.
It is. It really is. I mean, somebody told me on Twitter the other day, they're like, "Oh, let's go look at some highlights of Klay Thompson." I was like, "I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet, man." Like, just seeing how that guy was, you know, when he was fully healthy and everything was clicking for him, game 6 against OKC, I was like, man, that just kind of really brings me back. And, you know, it brings back some of the pain of seeing him out again. So, I mean, I totally agree with you on that.
Perfect complimentary player in today's NBA, guy who shoots it, you know, on another level and then can guard on the other end. It's just, I'm seriously. I was down for the whole day. When I heard about it, I was like, the next day, I was like, I don't want anybody, but don't talk to me, don't call me, don't tweet. No, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Put the phone on silent. No, do not disturb. Yes. It's just one of those days.
it's not my favorite thing to see Klay Thompson struggling at this point. Hopefully he gets back healthy, obviously. Shout out, prayers up, Klay.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All the best to that guy. He really deserves better than what he's have suffered the past couple years here. But I wanted to go back to your point about that young core, you know, talking about Ayton, you're talking about Bridges. I'm really impressed from Phoenix's offseason perspective because they didn't give up either of those guys in that trade. I was afraid that Bridges would be one of the players that OKC asked for. They'd say like, hey, you know, we're going to need that guy that we really think is going to be one of the prototypical wing players in today's NBA. And Phoenix stood their ground, you know, and they gave up a guy like Rubio that, you know, had some great years for him, but he's not going to be their long-term solution at that position. And then, of course, Ayton is still on board. Cameron Johnson, who had a better-than-expected season, I think, at least from a fit perspective. I mean, he's perfect in that front court with those guys.
He outplayed his – I think he outplayed whatever anybody's projection for him would have been and probably made Kelly Oubre expendable if you look at the way their roster broke down. Because I really loved Oubre with that group. He was kind of the Trevor Ariza, if you're talking about fit and, you know, where a guy kind of makes his bones on a team. He was Phoenix's version to me of what Trevor Ariza was for Houston a few years ago when they had CP and James Harden. So yeah, the one thing that I'll say about Phoenix is, for whatever reason, a different wind seems to have blown in there since Monty Williams showed up. Because I felt like a couple years ago they were on the right track, and then they kind of took a step back, and you know they just they weren't sure. I don't know if it was internal or what, but they just seemed like they weren't sure of the plan that they had. So there was kind of a hiccup in their process, but I think they've got back on that track now.
Me too. And Monty Williams is, you know, one of the great coaches you're going to see in the NBA, a great guy. He knows what he's doing out there. So him along with that front office, I think they've really aligned on their vision for this team. And it's really evident because you have that switchable front court. You have one of the great stars in Devin Booker. You have that steady point guard presence. And, you know, everything is kind of clicking for them now. And the opportunity is there for them to make a run. And, you know, I'm just so glad that Booker is going to have the opportunity to, we're going to assume, be a playoff team. And, you know, a guy like that that's really put up the numbers he's had over the past few years. He's been wrongly accused of being the reason why they've been a bad team, which, you know, from your reaction, I'm assuming that you've seen it as well. And it's just really crazy that people would say, like, he's an empty numbers guy. He's not a winner. And, you know, this, that, and the other. It's really unfair for him. So this is the starting moment. This is coming out party. People are going to really realize just how great of a player Devin Booker is. No matter what his defensive shortcomings may be, all that aside, I mean, he's just one of the great talents. So this is his opportunity. I'm just so glad that it's finally come along with for him. You know, better late than never. It's taken 4 or 5 years, but, you know, this is their time to make it happen.
Yeah, I think his defense, you know, improved dramatically. If you watched him in the bubble, he wasn't just good on offense. He was good on both ends. He was dominating people. He was putting in work. I mean, and I'm biased. You know, Devin and I share a hometown in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So I knew about him when he was, you know, kind of coming up and before he was a hotshot recruit and went to Kentucky and got drafted. You know, I was a fan of his dad's when he played. His dad played for the CBA team in my hometown. And so, you know, it's been fun to watch him evolve as a player. And I started calling him the long lost Splash Brother his rookie year. And when he kind of, you know, played beyond the expectations people had for him. John Calipari, to his credit, said that Booker was vastly underrated when he was in college. You didn't get a chance to see all the things he could do at Kentucky because of the talent they had and the way they played. So, you know, kudos to John Calipari. He said that about several of his guys, Jamal Murray and others. And he's been spot on. Yeah, he's been spot on about those guys being better pros than they were one and doneers at Kentucky. But – yeah. You know, give Devin Booker credit, give James Jones credit, and Monty Williams, give all those guys credit for recognizing the step that needed to be taken and embracing the change that comes with that, because it's not easy. You know, if you're Devin Booker, you could have easily said, look, I don't want anything to interrupt these numbers I'm putting up. He got his big contract, you know, so that you could look at it from a selfish perspective and say, why would he want things to change to the point where he's going to have to change the way he plays, you know, upgrade everything around me, but leave me alone. He didn't do that. When Monty Williams came in, he embraced the notion that, hey, you got to be better on defense. You got to be a better leader. You have to be more assertive. I mean, he accepted all those challenges and flourished, I thought. And the bubble was, you know, one of those coming out party type moments for him. Now we got to see if DeAndre Ayton is ready to take that next step in his development. Had the hiccup last year with the suspension, but has shown us some signs that he could, in a league where we don't rely on back to the basket bigs, he's got a chance to be a rarity in terms of a traditional center, so to speak, with some, you know, modern nuances to his game, but certainly a dominant low post type center, which would give, I think, would give the Suns and Chris Paul a comfort zone in a default setting where he could really go to work and make DeAndre Ayton a better player than what we've seen so far.
That's the other part of it. That pick and roll game with Chris Paul and Ayton should be a thing of beauty. And, you know, go ask DeAndre Jordan what Chris Paul did for him. You know, go ask Steven Adams what Chris Paul did for him last season. You know, Chris is one of those guys. He's going to make everybody better. But those big men, I mean, especially guys like Steven Adams. Chandler. To your point.
His best basketball. Yeah, but I mean, there's just a it's something I know we've gotten into this age of positionless basketball and the redefinition of certain spots, you know, and point guards that score as opposed to point guards who come down to facilitate. But CP does all of it. And you can ask David West, there hasn't been a teammate that he's had that's on the cusp of bigger things that hasn't realized it while playing with him. Blake Griffin as well. I mean, he helped elevate the games of quite a few guys he's played with throughout his career. And I would think that DeAndre Ayton would be in line for a similar type bump playing with CP.
Me too. I mean, look out for him as being one of those most improved players. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him to be in that conversation, even if he doesn't win it. You know, I can see him having a leap in efficiency. His counting stats might take a small bump up, but everything overall is going to be better for him as a result of having a guy like CP3, the catalyst, the leader, to make things happen for him and be that driver. So I'm super excited about Phoenix. And, you know, we can go all day about the promise that exists in the desert, looking at what they've done. But, you know, suffice to say, they're going to be one of the great teams to watch.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
But transitioning here, Seku, we have to talk about some of the teams that have made some questionable decisions. I mean, not every team has had a great free agency. They haven't passed with flying colors. Let's go ahead and talk about Sacramento here a little bit. I mean, they've made a couple of moves over the past couple of days that have raised some eyebrows and made us question, you know, what their path is. And this is one of the common denominators of teams that have struggled and not made the playoffs in 16 years like Sacramento, is they don't really have a vision. They don't have a clear direction. They have De'Aaron Fox, but after that, it's really just like, what is your plan? Where do you see yourself in 2 or 5 years? And maxing Fox is great. Having Healed is great, even though, you know, he has some trouble with that team. So I don't know how long he's going to be there. But I mean, drafting Haliburton was a great move, but declining that offer sheet, declining to match that offer sheet for Bogdanovich raised some eyebrows. Some people said that it was an okay move because it would have tied up some more cap or would have constricted some of the opportunities for that team in terms of what they can do roster wise. But I mean, overall, I mean, that's a contract you could have used to flip later on. It's another asset. It's another great player, a great shooter. You know, he's a guy that's going to average 14-3-3 for you, be a versatile wing, be a great shooter, and pretty good in the pick and roll game as well. So losing out on him, I wasn't a great fan of it. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I've seen both perspectives. So that's why I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts on this. If you were the front office of Sacramento, like, would you have taken the opportunity to match that, or would you let him go as we just saw them do just a few days ago?
No, I would have matched it, you know, without even blinking. Fundamentally, you don't give up an asset in this league if you don't have to. You always find a way to turn it into something, even if it's second round picks, cash consideration. So you don't let an asset walk out the door. And Bogdanovich, I'm not saying he's an all-star. I'm not saying he's going to come to Atlanta and turn out like Joe Johnson did when the Hawks got him. But he's a good enough player that there would have been a robust market for his services around the league if you really wanted to get something done. A sign and trade would have been very doable. Aaron, I don't have a good answer for what the hell the Kings are doing. I don't think they do. They've been on a weird path since they fired Mike Malone when he was coaching there. I've scratched my head trying to figure out exactly what it is, the vision is. Have they stuck to it, or have they crumbled it up and thrown it away 4 or 5 times in this stretch trying to figure out what's next? And it falls to the ownership and front office level to really understand what's going on, or to try and comprehend what that internal vision might be. I really like De'Aaron Fox. So, I mean, I'm not at all opposed to building around him, but I think they're rolling the dice dramatically on Marvin Bagley, who I loved in that draft. I thought just from a ceiling perspective, that was the kind of player you want, a prototypical front court, you know, versatile scorer with the kind of size and length and athleticism to be good on both ends in a league where Giannis and Kevin Durant and LeBron and Kawhi Leonard and some of those guys that play that flex forward position. I call it flex forward. You could be a point forward or your stretch forward. It's whichever forward spot that can be your, you know, your main guy, your number one guy. If you're going to draft somebody like that, where you drafted them, I hate to even bring it up for Kings fans when you talk about who they passed up to draft him.
Yeah.
That's got to be a sore spot for Kings fans. You passed up a couple of all-star starters in their second seasons to take Bagley over them. That's a tough look. So there'll be some hand-wringing in Sacramento until, as you mentioned, that playoff, you know, void is humongous, especially for a franchise that had been so consistently in a previous era. You're not going to get the grace period that you hope for if you're, you know, Vivek Randavive and that new front office. You're gonna have to show something. People are going to have to see something out of this group you decide to build around. And so it's going to be a lot of pressure on Luke Walton, no question about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, their off seasons have been very disappointing over the past few years. And, I mean, I was on board with Bagley as well. I thought it was a great signing at the time. And I think part of the reason he struggled is injuries. I think he still has a very high ceiling. But, you know, it's just kind of unfortunate that they find themselves in this position again where it's kind of like they're just running in circles. You know, they might see one season where it's like they get to 30 wins and it's like, wow, we're making progress. And then the next season, they're back at 24, 25 wins. It's just like this constant kind of hamster wheel, this you know, habit they find themselves in. They're just kind of like taking one step forward, two steps back. And, you know, it's tough for fans. It's tough for everybody to kind of see. And then, of course, the other move they made the other day, you know, signing, you know, a certain center that played for Portland last season. You know, being a Heat fan, I have some not the greatest memories. So it's kind of a staple of my podcast. I don't name him. His name is taboo in our kind of our fan base. You know, that 7-footer over there coming out of, he was actually, you know, there's some pictures brought up of him with DeMarcus Cousins, you know, back, yeah, you know, around the time he was, you know, they were in that draft.
In the league, yeah.
Yeah, he came in the league there. So he's coming full circle. And I just think that although he has so much talent, you know, he could put up all the numbers in the world. I mean, having a guy like that on your bench and in your locker room, it's just like your culture is already kind of unstable. You know, and bringing in a guy like that that will complain about minutes, complain about touches, and just give people a hard time is not the kind of thing I'd want to see. If I was a fan, if I was another player in the organization, I would be a little bit kind of turned off by that move. You know, just seeing, you know, his past and some of the things he's done. I think there's no surprise, you know, there's a reason why it took him so long to get any kind of deal. I don't think there was many suitors out there for him. And, you know, that says something if you're putting up double doubles and 2 or 3 blocks a game and you can't hardly get an offer. So that's just red flags everywhere, you know?
Yeah. I didn't realize he was, he who should not be named on this podcast, so I won't say his name either. listen, I mean, let's just be plain about it. Like when you have the sort of baggage he's carrying around as a player, whether it was in Miami or in Portland or wherever he's been, that's a difficult burden to shake in this league because, A, you're playing a position that has been completely redefined since you came in the league. So you're not a stretch big man at all. Literally a traditional back to the basket, low post, rebounding, shot blocker. So the market for your skill set is going to be scarce anyway. You add in the baggage and the fact that there's people murmuring and wondering, does this guy love to play basketball? Does, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All of that becomes an issue for that player because of it. I thought he did some admirable things for him in Portland. I thought the role he played, the energy he played with, the effort he gave was as good as I'd seen from him on a consistency basis when he was in Portland. And it still wasn't enough for them to say, You know what I mean? So that anytime an incumbent team takes a flyer on one of its own, that's not a red flag, but that's certainly a signal to the rest of the league what the value is or what they might feel about
it. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I don't think there's any more to say about Sacramento other than it's going to be another year in the lottery most likely, and hopefully they find a way to turn it around at some point because they've been through it. They've definitely been through it. But another team, speaking of teams that have been through it over the past few years, go talk to some Knicks fans about their experiences over the past few years, and they will give you many stories about, the boos during the draft and, consistently being one of the top, one of the worst three teams in the league. And, this offseason didn't do much to change their fortunes. I mean, kudos to their front office for making a few value signings like Austin Rivers, Nerlens Noel. I mean, they're fine players and the values were good. But, just nothing that's really going to change your fortunes. I mean, they did draft Obi Toppin, great pickup.
I like that. I did like that pick.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be a solid player for a long time, given his skill set and his athletic tools and everything. Here's the problem, though. You get to a guy that's actually got a lot of talent, and it's like, wow, they're really making some strides here. And then you go look at their depth chart, and there's a guy by the name of Julius Randle sitting at the exact same position that he plays. Yeah. So, again, it's going to be a lot of – balancing acts there. I mean, it's not like you can play those guys together very often without giving up 115 points a game. It's going to be a tough balancing act for them. So they're probably going to have to split those minutes up the four, which I don't think Randle or Toppin are going to like. They both want to get some playing time. They both want to come in and assert themselves. I mean, you're paying Randle $20 million a year. So that's not a guy you're going to just go and just bench, the entire game. So that's just another, another difficult thing about this whole thing. They're going to have to deal with and balance over this next season. They re-sign Elfrid Payton. It's like, well, fine. You can't shoot for anything, but I guess it's not the worst deal. But Kevin Knox is still over there toiling away. So
yeah,
it's just disappointing. I don't see.
It's a young roster in a lot of respects. Mitchell Robinson, I think, is certainly a keeper. I like RJ Barrett. I know a lot of people are down on Barrett. I like him. I think he's just going to have to figure out where his spots are in the league early on and continue to develop offensively, obviously. It's just tough when you continue to run on a hamster wheel the way teams like you mentioned the Kings and the Knicks and some of these other teams who have just been, fixtures in the lottery. It's tough to get out of there because even when you get it right, it feels like you got it wrong. You know what I mean? I remember Kristaps Porzingis getting booed on draft night. People were panning him big time. They didn't care about the ceiling and the potential. Then he goes out and, to me, really exceeds a lot of people's expectations for him. So you got that right. And then he wants out and you can't hold on to him. So it's like, even when you get it right, you get it wrong. And you just wonder, a great way to study how teams have progressed in that I've used in all my years covering the league, Aaron, is I go back and look at your past five drafts and ask myself, how many of the guys you've selected in the draft in the past five seasons to whatever season we're in now are either stars, rotation players, on your team, or even in the league? And if they're in the league, did you draft them? Did you not have the patience necessary to see it through, and they're somewhere else flourishing? But you start looking at a team's past five drafts and it'll color a picture for you that's very clear about where they fit in the league overall. And the Knicks, they haven't had a great drafting record, whether it's players they picked that didn't stick it out in New York or what have you. That's the first thing. You look at that revolving door they've had, in the front office and at the coaching level for sure, but at the front office level, there's a certain amount of continuity you have to have when you're a bad team that if you don't, you will be a bad team until further notice. And they just haven't exhibited that for enough time to help them climb out of this mess and get ready to play at a high level.
Yeah, I like how you brought up their two players. Actually, it looks like that have hit on over the past couple of years, Barrett and Mitchell Robinson. The only issue with Barrett, it's like, they have to give him space to operate. They're kind of choking off his, ability to drive, get to the paint. I mean, if you said Elfrid Payton, what is that going to do for a guy like Barrett that exceeds going downhill? and using that strength and, you know, that body control to his advantage. It's just disappointing to see the fit in the roster, even when you do get some of those pieces right in terms of talent and ability. So, yeah, all around, it's just kind of like another, you know, it is what it is kind of story. You know, we're here again with the Knicks and, you know.
Groundhog Day.
That's exactly what it is. It
really is.
Yep, absolutely. So we're heading on here to the last category here. We're looking at the ugly move. So if that wasn't bad enough, we have another category that goes down a little bit farther than that. So Detroit and Charlotte are the two teams that I picked on for this segment. Detroit, you know, they have centers. What more can you say? They like centers. You know, they love centers. And, yeah, I mean, other than that, I mean, they picked up this. So here's what kind of confused me. I just want to put that out there. They sign all these centers, and then they go out there and get Zaire Smith from the Sixers. And people were saying, like, wow, they got this nice young player that hadn't really had a chance to prove himself. They're making some great moves. And then they just waive him. You know, so I'm just like, you know, I don't really know what you're doing at that point. Are you really trying to build? Are you trying to buy low? Because I think you mentioned that point, you know, back earlier when we were talking about, like, Portland and these teams like that. It's like buy low, low risk, high reward. I saw him as one of those players, but unfortunately not on the roster anymore. So
but you do that, but you buy low with, you know, with low risk, high reward players when you have stars, like when you, that's mm-hmm. when you're filling out a roster, not when you're trying to retool one or resurrect it. Troy Weaver's had an interesting time so far in that chair as the GM of the Pistons. What we don't know, I'll give him a pass, though. What we don't know is what their master plan might be. That remains to be seen. So you pile up assets for a reason. The Hornets are, that's a different, well, I don't, signing, I understand, you know, you're thinking, how are we going to get high level players to come here? Do we either hit on one in a draft, which honestly they have not, go back and look at a team's draft record and ask yourself, how many of the players have the Hornets drafted? You can go back further than 5 years. You go back 7 years. How many have they drafted in the last 7 years who are stars, all-stars even, really good players on their team or anywhere else? I mean, it's the record has been spotty. The best player they've drafted in the last decade was an all-star and was the face of the franchise. And now he plays for an Eastern Conference rival. So, and Kemba Walker. So the I'm much more confused. Detroit, I would give an incomplete as of right now because we don't know what else they're trying to get done. The Hornets, I would give a much different letter grade, and it wouldn't be good because I don't know what it is they're trying to do, and they're far more established in terms of where they've been in recent years. Like they just, I thought the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist thing would have been a great piece for him. Like he should have been a high level piece as a defensive stopper, you know, kind of a, I'm dating myself because you might not have been paying that kind of attention, but there was a guy named Deshaun Stevenson who used to play for the Wizards who was a talented, but wasn't the fully rounded talent you needed him to be, but he was so good as a specialist, as a defensive agitator and, you know, opportunistic shot maker that he probably elevated himself beyond where he really would have been normally in the league. That's what MKG needed to be for the Hornets. Like even when you don't hit it out the park with those lottery picks, you got to get a guy who is at least a staple and a fixture in your lineup.
Right.
Kind of like what the Atlanta Hawks did when they drafted Marvin Williams too. And Marvin didn't become the superstar player that his draft positioning suggested, but he played 15 years in the league and was a very productive player on some really decent teams that were playoff teams. And, you know, that you can't swing and miss as often as the Hornets have in the draft and expect to be a better team than what they are.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more with your thoughts on Charlotte. I mean, my issue with them is, and you know, I understand the ball signing. They went with the best available talent. I mean, I would do that every day. I mean, at a team like that, you're not going to find guys like that in free agency. So you just kind of have to, you know, just hope for the best. I mean, he could be a bust, but I mean, there's a chance he could be a special player. So you have to bank on that opportunity since you're a team that's not going to be one of those free agent destinations. You know, you have to approach the draft a little bit differently. But yeah, that Gordon Hayward signing is just rough. And then not only are they trying to get him for $30 million a season, but on top of that, they don't have the room in their salary sheet to accommodate his salary. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to open up $8 to $9 million to bring in that salary, which might require them to stretch Batum's salary, which is $9 million a season. So effectively paying almost $40 million a season for a guy that's probably not even going to be an all-star and that might not even be healthy. You know, if we look over the past 2 or 3 years for Gordon Hayward, at some point he misses 10 or 12 games for a hand injury or ankle or something like that. So it's just rough. And it almost seems like they're going down the same path as they went down with Kemba Walker. It's like this great talent, but they're not able to bring in anybody else along with him. So you're an eighth seed, you're a ninth seed, you're good, but you're not really great. And that's not where you want to be in the NBA. So that's what makes me a little bit worried when projecting out over the next few years, for the Charlotte organization.
Yeah. And when you're piecing together whatever the puzzle might be for a team, you just have to look at transactions, drafts, and where players were acquired, what they've ended up doing. They were applauded for going all in a few years ago and paying their own free agents. Like, everybody's like, hey, Charlotte's doing it right. You know, they had a team, they make a breakthrough and get to the postseason, and then they double down on their own guys, and it just busted on them. You know, Batum never was the same player he was before he got that deal. No fault of his own. It just happens sometimes. Right. As you mentioned, Gordon Hayward's a prime example. He struggled the last couple of years because of injuries, not because he's magically not the same talent that he was when he was in Utah and when he was one of the hot free agents on the market.
Exactly.
It's just the way things evolve. Sometimes it is, you know, what happens is beyond the control of the players involved. But as an organization, you know, to me, when you start talking about building culture and just understanding who and what you are, I thought the Hornets had the patron saint for their predicament in Kemba Walker. And when they decided, after paying all those other guys, the price tag for Kemba was too great, I thought, that's not the message. Yeah. That's not the right message you send externally, but it's also not the right message internally. When everybody knows that this thing runs because you've got Kemba, and you know his free agent year is coming. You know there's going to be an opportunity. If you don't make the decision to double down on your guys, which I think they got burned doing it before that with Batum and some of those other guys in the gym, and thought, we're not going to do this again. It's like, you messed it up the first time, whether it was your fault or not, but you can't hold that against Kemba the next time when it's clear that he's the cornerstone player of your franchise. It's tough because you're battling, like I said, those external expectations of what people think of you or what the fans are. And then there's an internal vision of what you want to be as a team and franchise. I tell people all the time, do you think out of the 30 teams in the league, 10 to 12 of them go, you know what, we stink. You know, we don't want to be good. We don't, you know, of course not. They want to get lucky, and they want the guy that they draft, wherever they draft him, to turn out to be the best player in the draft the way Milwaukee did with Giannis. You know what I mean? Like, everybody wants that to be their story. It's just not the reality.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's how it goes. And it's a little bit more difficult for front offices like that in small markets, because you can't just be the Lakers and be absolutely awful for 6 or 7 years and wake up one morning and you have LeBron James. It just doesn't work like that, unfortunately, for those franchises. But, before I let you go, Seki, I wanted to kind of end this podcast on a little bit of a lighter note, more optimism, since we've gotten down to some of these teams. You know, from your perspective, you know, you are somebody that writes about the league. You cover the league on a very high level. Going into this next season, 2021, like I said, preseason, just a couple weeks away at this point, what are you most looking forward to, or what do you think might be most different, you know, this season compared to last season or what we've seen before, you know, in terms of covering the league or watching the league or whatever it may be, from your perspective? Just curious to see, you know, what you're really looking forward to as we dive into a season that's going to be trying to bounce back here in a sense from, a down year and some unfortunate circumstances you find ourselves in.
Yeah, I thought it was, if fantastic that we ended up getting a finish to the 2019-2020 season, first and foremost. Kudos to the players, the league, and everybody involved. I was in the bubble. I'm still scratching my head as to how they pulled that whole thing off and kept everybody safe. So I think they've alleviated some of that pressure on the 2020-21 season because we did get a chance to see it through. But what I'm really looking forward to is I tell people all the time, what seems like a long time in reality, in sports years, is nothing. If somebody had told you 3 years ago the Warriors would be knocking on the outside, on the door from the outside, looking in at the contender picture in the West, and the Nuggets and the Trailblazers, you know, and the Clippers would be in that space they used to occupy in terms of going into a season saying these are the teams that are contenders. Not surprising with the Lakers. You get LeBron, it throws the entire thing. But just how quickly things change in this league based on free agency, drafts, injuries, things you have no control over. That was what I always look forward to with each new season. It's just what is going to be the thing that happens that nobody saw coming. You know, nobody saw Giannis coming. Nobody saw Giannis 2-time MVP, back-to-back MVP coming. Mm-hmm. If they did, they're lying to you. I know it's revisionist history. Now, everybody that didn't draft Giannis, that didn't get him, wanted him, had him as their guy, were plotting everything they could, and then the Bucks went and stole him from him. It's like, that sounds good, but
yeah,
the Bucks picked him when a bunch of other teams didn't. You know what I'm saying? So there are going to be things about this season that will happen that we don't see coming. There's going to be a team that does what Miami did last year in the bubble, and really all season. Somebody we don't see coming, whose players step into bigger roles or more specific roles and exceed whatever expectation there might be. I'm looking forward to whoever is this year's Jimmy Butler and Miami. That's what I'm looking forward to, because we don't know who they are. We'll know 20, 30 games into a 72-game season, which all of these different parameters add intrigue to a season, because we had, you know, last year was the longest NBA season ever.
Mm-hmm. Almost a whole year.
Yeah, and when I started writing about it at the calendar year, and we're in the bubble, and players are talking about, yeah, man, it was a year ago today we were starting training camp. And, you know, it's like, it's jarring to think about it. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the great unknown, which is to me what always makes the NBA season the best reality TV show around. I say that all the time. Like, these reality shows are actually scripted.
Right.
Where, you know, somebody somewhere knows the plot. We have no idea what the plot is on any given NBA season. And that's what makes it must-see TV for me, as always, and such an intriguing thing to follow.
True that. I think it's going to be just more of what we love about the NBA. It's kind of like in any given year, there's going to be those surprises. There's going to be teams that assert themselves and you don't expect it. It's just going to be in a much bigger kind of scale this season because the circumstances are so different. So, you know, I'm with you. It's going to be an exciting ride. It's going to be fascinating. So, you know, let's head into it, and let's, you know, keep our eyes and ears peeled for, you know, whatever is going to kind of come around the corner and surprise us here. But Sekou, as we wind on this podcast, I want to thank you again for spending your afternoon, evening with us. It was really great to hear your perspective on somebody that was in the bubble, that's somebody that's covered the league for a long time, to give their take on this offseason. So I really appreciate you. And before you go, why don't you let the listeners know, people that are watching, where they can find you if they want to follow you on Twitter, they want to kind of start following you, and what you're providing for NBA.com and NBA TV.
Sure. Thank you, Aaron. You can follow on Twitter at Sekou Smith NBA. Certainly anywhere you get your podcast, you can find the Hangtime Podcast. And on NBA TV and NBA.com all season long, they let me stick my ugly mug out there and rant about my favorite things. So check it out. Follow, degree, you know, debate, agree, disagree. I love the conversation. I love the back and forth. I talk about sports 24/7. We're just lucky, you know, some of us are lucky enough to do it for a living. So I never look that in the face and take it for granted. But yeah, you know, And it's going to be interesting. I mean, I do the MVP ladder on NBA.com every Friday during the season. This will be probably the most interesting year I've done it, given the circumstances, what we have coming back. We didn't even talk about Brooklyn and what those expectations are. I mean, there's so many cool, you know, crazy things that could go on this season. And and I'm glad that we're going to have a chance to kind of chronicle that and dig into it. So on all those places, you can find the work of myself and my colleagues at NBA.com and NBA TV. And we're fired up. I mean, we had a short off season, Aaron, but everybody's gassing back up, getting ready. December 22nd, it'll be here before you know it. So enjoy that season.
Definitely, definitely. Well, thanks again for your input here, Sekou, and be sure to check him out, guys. Fantastic writer, reporter on the league. You know, he's going to give you guys a great input, and especially the MVP ladder. I mean, I've been reading it for probably about 10 years now, and just fantastic work over there. So check it out, guys. And then, of course, for Business Casual Basketball, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, BC Basketball 2. And then, of course, bcbasketball.info online. We have a free agency list going up in a couple days and a lot of other content coming soon. So don't miss out, guys. But enjoy the rest of your evening. Enjoy this time before the offseason or before the regular season, because as we know, it's going to be full force once we dive into it. So thanks again, everybody, for watching, for listening. And we'll catch you over here for more NBA analysis on the podcast real soon.